A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Economist.
On this vote, the yeas are 352, the nays are 65. The bill is passed, and without the objection, the motion...
On March 13th, America's House of Representatives passed a bill demanding that TikTok, the enormously popular social media app, cut its ties with China, or else risk being banned in America.
Although TikTok is based in Los Angeles and Singapore, it is a subsidiary of ByteDance, a Chinese tech giant, and that worries American politicians.
TikTok is a threat to our national security because it is owned by ByteDance, which does the bidding of the Chinese Communist Party.
TikTok said its data is not accessible to China-based ByteDance employees. False.
TikTok has been fighting back, insisting that the app is safe from state manipulation.
China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs recently denounced the bill, saying America was resorting to hegemonic moves when it could not succeed in fair competition.
I'm Alice Su, The Economist senior China correspondent, and I'm here with my co-host, David Rennie, our Beijing bureau chief.
This week, we're asking, does Chinese ownership of TikTok really pose a threat to America?
This is Drum Tower.
From The Economist.
David, good to see you.
How have you been?
I'm good. I've just returned from a reporting trip in Tokyo and sadly missed the cherry blossom season there, but I'm back in warm Taipei and happy to be back.
Did you have good sushi? Are you a sushi person?
Yes. Yes, I am.
I think I could have guessed that. Yeah.
I am a voracious consumer of sushi. So I very much enjoyed it. I didn't see any hint of negative impact on the sushi industry from all that Chinese nationalism last year. At least not anything that I could observe.
Maybe cheaper fish, because it doesn't have a Chinese market right now.
Yeah, I was enjoying myself.
Fantastic. So Alice, it's a big deal that the House of Representatives passed this bill by a massive margin. But of course, it's not law yet, because it has to go through the Senate and be signed by the president.
Yeah, that's right. But there's been huge bipartisan support for it. And so for good reason, it has been really big in the news and has sparked a lot of discussion about what's going to happen next. David, are you on TikTok?
I am not. I am aware that lots of people are. 1 billion people are active users around the world. And half of all Americans, 170 million people in the US, are on TikTok. And, you know, given that there's babies and people who don't have phones, that's a big majority of phone-using Americans.
Yeah, that's right. And especially younger Americans. There was actually a poll last year that found a third of American adults under the age of 30 were regularly getting their news from TikTok. So it's not just this, you know, fun social media app where you see people dancing on the streets, making little fun videos, but, you know, people are learning about the world. They're keeping up with what's going on through this app.
Yeah, and presidential campaigns happen on TikTok. So it is clearly a very big deal that its fate is now up in the air. And in fact, it's also just remarkable that something as unbelievably popular is potentially going to be banned by politicians who traditionally do not like to ban things that every young voter loves.
Yeah, it would be strange for politicians to ban it, but technically this is not a ban, right? This is just a bill saying that TikTok needs to cut its ties with China, most likely by having its parent company, ByteDance, sell it to a non-Chinese company. And if it does that, it can still continue to exist and be used by American citizens. But if it doesn't do that, then it's likely that it will be banned.
And we're going to talk about all the ways in which actually it's not nearly as simple as just saying it can be sold to someone else. So I'm not on TikTok. I'm in fact not on any social media except Twitter. It's not even Twitter anymore, is it? It's like X or something.
Well, David, I know you're on Be Real because I've seen you use it in our recordings.
Okay, that is true. One member of my family and I are on Be Real, which is a thing. So how about you, Alice? Are you a TikToker? Is that what people say?
A TikToker. I am not, but I'm familiar with TikTok and I know how popular it is. And, you know, until recent years, I don't think many Americans thought much about who owned TikTok or the company behind the app. It's only recently, in the last few years, that American politicians have started thinking about it and realizing and talking about the fact that it is owned by a Chinese company, ByteDance. And in their view, that makes it a threat to American national security.
Yeah, and this is not a new concern. The FBI in America has said for some years now that TikTok could pose a national security risk. The Trump administration was already considering a ban actually back in 2020. And of course, TikTok says it is not under the control of the Chinese government or the Chinese Communist Party. And I guess what people are worrying about is several things. Is it dangerous to have the app on your phone? Does that somehow make your phone a security risk? We've seen governments all over the West banning TikTok from government-owned smartphones. Is it sucking data and sending it back to China? Is it censoring stuff for China's benefit? And could it be used to sort of influence elections in the way that we've seen Russian troll farms influence elections? So it's a whole range of concerns pouring down on TikTok.
And TikTok has been pushing back, right? They have hired this Singaporean CEO, Shou Zi Chew, and he's been grilled along with other tech CEOs in front of the US Senate. There was this clip that went viral earlier this year in January where he was being repeatedly asked about his ties to China.
So you said today, as you often say, that you live in Singapore. Of what nation are you a citizen?
Singapore.
Are you a citizen of any other nation?
No, Senator.
Have you ever applied for Chinese citizenship?
Senator, I serve my nation in Singapore. I did not.
Do you have a Singaporean passport?
Yes, and I served my military for two and a half years in Singapore.
Do you have any other passports from any other nations?
No, Senator.
Have you ever been a member of the Chinese Communist Party?
Senator, I'm Singaporean. No.
Yeah, you know, Alice, I know that clip went viral. It was all over Twitter and all the rest of the internet. And each side saying, oh, Tom Cotton made this really good point. And then the other side said, no, Tom Cotton got owned because the guy pointed out he has a Singaporean passport. I actually found the whole thing very depressing on both sides because Tom Cotton was showboating for the cameras. You know, you remember the Chinese Communist Party. But on the other hand, the idea that the CEO's nationality settles all questions, I don't want to kind of live in a world where serious questions of trust in international business could be resolved by the passport that the CEO holds, let alone the idea that his ethnicity, you know, if you're Tom Cotton's camp, might be the clue. It's a very cheap and depressing way of tackling this complex question.
Yeah, I remember when that clip went viral, and the way I saw it was kind of depressing, as you say, because it was almost a very McCarthyist moment where it's like you see these American politicians just zoning in on, are you Chinese or not? And if you look ethnically Chinese, it's like, are you a member of the Communist Party? And I think a lot of younger people were sharing that clip as a way to kind of poke fun at this kind of, you know, hunt down the Chinese vibe in American politics these days. But at the same time, it's kind of a distraction, right, to be zooming in on that question, because whether he's Chinese or not, the question of whether this app could be a threat, it's bigger than that. And the CEO of TikTok, Shou Chew, has continued to push back against American politicians' pressure. He released this response to the TikTok bill saying that there's a lot of misinformation about the app and calling on users of TikTok to stand up for their rights.
Thank you to our incredible community. You are what makes TikTok so special. Thank you for making your voices heard. Over the last few years, we have invested to keep your data safe and our platform free from outside manipulation. We have committed that we will continue to do so. This legislation, if signed into law, will lead to a ban of TikTok in the United States. Even the bill sponsors admit that that's their goal.
So you can see him there in his navy blue suit, looking at the camera, talking directly to the TikTok users and telling them, you know, make your voices heard, stand up for this app that we all love.
And of course, like so many partisan debates right now, this is not going to move the needle one bit. Because if you already believe that China can make companies do their bidding and keep it secret because it's a kind of intelligence operation, then you would say, well, of course he's going to say that. And why would we believe him? And so it just doesn't address the fundamental problem that people can't decide whether you can trust a Chinese company because they don't know whether a Chinese company is able to say no to the genuinely sinister intelligence agencies of the People's Republic of China.
Well, David, what are people saying about this inside of China?
So you've had the official comment from China's foreign ministry, which is, of course, very vocal against the bill. And then you've had this interesting presentation inside China that it's being framed as yet another example of American democratically elected politicians, in fact, being lawless bullies bent on keeping China down. So you've had clips of American influencers pleading for TikTok to be saved. You've had lawyers explaining why it's actually outrageous to ban this successful Chinese product.
Yeah, and it's interesting that there's such an outcry to protect TikTok because actually most Chinese people can't even use TikTok. It's not available in China.
Yeah. And of course there, Alice, you're really talking about the larger question of China's extremely strict controls on the internet, particularly when it comes to accessing foreign internet sites and apps. And that is the framing of the whole of this debate about TikTok, really. It's, I think what Congress is really asking is larger than just TikTok or ByteDance. It is, can an app like this that is so wildly successful that, you know, many members of Congress, their own children or families are using it, could it be in some way a tool for a dictatorship? And unfortunately for TikTok, there are examples in China of short video apps that look a lot like TikTok that really are designed to serve the Chinese Communist Party's interests.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, the most obvious app we would think of is Douyin. It's the Chinese version of TikTok. It's very similar. You know, it's this short video social media app. It's actually owned by ByteDance, the exact same company, and it functions in much the same way. But the difference is that it exists within China and complies with all of China's internet control regulations.
If one of the questions that American politicians need to answer is the technical one, can a short video app be made to do all of the censorship and surveillance that China demands of apps inside its own borders? Douyin does all of that. So the capability is there, and it's ByteDance that has developed it.
And that's why it's really worth taking a closer look at Douyin. So David, are you on Douyin?
So I don't have an account, but you know, I have seen Douyin, I've seen Kuaishou, one of its rivals, for work. You know, if you're writing about farmers who go viral online or long distance lorry drivers who kind of record their kind of life, then those are the apps that you look at.
Yeah, I remember very clearly when Douyin and Kuaishou and all these video apps became popular in China around the mid-2010s. It was like something you couldn't miss because suddenly there were always people all around you, you know, on the bus and subway stations and all kinds of public places watching these videos on their phones. And their phones are usually not silent, and you just hear these sound effects all the time, and you hear like video after video after video, like it never ends.
Yeah, no, there's a particular noise when I'm sitting on a high-speed train for a long journey. The guy next to me is watching, and there's this like repeated use of that canned, wheezy laugh to say that something is hilarious.
You mean this one?
Yeah, that's very triggering. That's taking me back to some train journeys.
Yeah, Douyin is an incredible platform for creativity. You mentioned, you know, that it became really popular in rural China. There's a lot of ordinary people recording videos of their life on the farm, but they can make it really romantic or really funny, and they can make dramas and cooking shows out of their day-to-day lives. And it does give people the chance to kind of broadcast their lives in a way that they never could before. David, take a look at this example.
This is really interesting. It's one of those many examples of rural idylls that stressed out urbanites on trains kind of like to watch or something. And so it's this young couple in a sort of flowery meadow picking these pretty flowers and having this, frankly, a bit stilted conversation. And I can't decide whether it's kind of touching or cringy, as my children would say.
Yeah, there's like romantic music in the background, and later on, you know, they pick some bamboo and they go home and they chop it up and they cook a heartwarming meal together. I mean, it's very wholesome and it's kind of harmless, and it's similar to how people saw TikTok initially. Yeah, it was just fun videos. You know, people are being creative. They're singing songs, they're doing dances. Like, how could this possibly be a security threat?
Yeah, and how could it be a threat to the Chinese Communist Party within China? Because I think, you know, if someone in the West is puzzled that the Communist Party that wants a total monopoly of the information that it provides is allowing private media companies to become so enormous, well, one of the reasons is that a lot of the content being produced by these for-profit media companies is just astonishingly wholesome and in line with what the party calls core socialist values and positive energy.
Yeah, exactly. Everything that people are posting on Douyin is happening within the bounds of tight party control, right? You're not going to see any kind of sensitive historical incidents in there. And there's all kinds of ways that the government makes sure that it can control and know who's posting what. If you're someone who's commenting or making a video, you have to register using your real name. You know, it shows your IP location automatically. The algorithms behind the app are actually censored. And there are these huge censorship teams working not only for Douyin, but for all social media platforms in China that are manually, you know, monitoring and blocking things all the time.
It's incredible how extensive the algorithmic work is. I was in a market the other day. There was a woman live streaming herself as she sold Cultural Revolution propaganda posters. And she had to put a little piece of paper over Chairman Mao's face in every poster because the algorithm zaps your feed. If Chairman Mao appears on the feed, then you must be talking about politics and your feed goes dead. And so she was selling Mao posters, but Mao's face had to be covered with a little piece of paper and everything. It was very, very strange. But she explained to me it was the algorithm.
That's very clever of her as a live stream marketer. And that also reflects how creative Chinese people are. I mean, they're well aware that there are all these restrictions. And sometimes some influencers, even on Douyin, talk about them and complain about them. Here's a video from a guy who calls himself Boss Zhao, and he is explaining how the regulations work.
你一定要知道啊，系统它就是一个大机器。当你在直播的时候，它是实时在识别你和监控你的。
So he's saying you have to know this system is a huge machine, and when you're live streaming, it's recognizing you and it's monitoring you in real time. And if you get multiple pop-up warnings about the content, then they're going to reduce referral traffic, so there will be less people seeing your video. And if you make two violations, they'll shut you down. And then he goes on to explain that Douyin is not only monitoring political content or, you know, bloody or pornographic content, those usual sensitive things, but it also penalizes you if you're making too many direct requests for rewards, or if you are weeping loudly, or if you're highlighting negative parts of society. Like, there's all kinds of things that even the platform itself goes out of its way to control.
Yeah, we've seen live streamers given criminal penalties for singing the Chinese national anthem on social media with insufficient respect. I've been in a business where they were live streaming selling stuff and they got panicked that I'd be visible as a foreigner behind them because foreigners are not actually allowed on that version of the app. They'd have to register in a different way, and so the algorithm was going to spot a foreigner and shut them down. So there is this extraordinary control, and we know banned words on Douyin, you know, things like helps you lose weight or anti-aging. That sort of triggers the alarms for unproven medical claims.
So these are all Chinese restrictions on Douyin, which again is the app people use inside China. And they don't apply in the same way to TikTok. And TikTok is outside of China, so it doesn't necessarily have to follow those same restrictions. I mean, for example, if you look up the white paper protests, you know, these protests against the zero COVID lockdowns that happened in China, you look them up on TikTok and lots of things will come up.
But if you try them out on Douyin, they're not there.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
So it does seem at first like if you're just searching things, it will seem like TikTok is much more open. TikTok is outside of the Chinese internet and you can find things that are going to be censored on Douyin. But then there are also a lot of accusations of TikTok suppressing certain things and promoting others. I mean, I think this is what's tricky about TikTok and other algorithm-driven social media, because it's not just about whether something is allowed to exist on the platform or not, but it's about whether the platform pushes and promotes certain content towards users and suppresses other content. And that makes it really hard to prove if it's trying to influence users' thinking or not. For example, in Taiwan, in the recent elections, there was a lot of suspicion about whether TikTok was promoting certain candidates over others. But there's always this plausible deniability, right, where the app can say, well, the algorithm is just serving users what they want. And then researchers will say, well, are they doing that or are they complying with Chinese preferences? And if you can't see the algorithm, it's like, you don't know.
And going back to this problem that ByteDance has, that in China, it certainly does have to serve the Chinese Communist Party's orders and preferences. We've had, for example, a former head of engineering for ByteDance's US operations. Now, he filed a lawsuit after he was fired and he said it was an unfair dismissal. But during that, he said that he had watched Chinese engineers who work on the Chinese apps tweaking the algorithm manually to promote anti-Japanese content when that was what the propaganda machine wanted, or to downplay videos promoting the democracy movement in Hong Kong.
And of course, there is a fear that the Chinese government could pressure ByteDance into using TikTok to do the same thing, to promote things that the Communist Party wants to promote and to downplay things that it doesn't want to highlight.
And a final problem for ByteDance when it's trying to kind of prove this negative that no, we would never be forced to do that, is that that black box of the algorithm, that we don't know why it's promoting this content or demoting that content. In China, the authorities do demand access to algorithms on China's apps. And someone who knows all about how that works in China's tech sphere is our colleague in Shanghai, Don Wineland.
Don Wineland is the Economist China business and finance editor based in Shanghai. Hello, Don.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. It's great to have you back again.
So, Don, let's start with a first really important question. How much does the state and the Communist Party influence private companies in China? And has that degree of control increased under the current leader, Xi Jinping?
Yeah, it's a really important question for China right now. And a lot of people are asking this and looking into this. So the question, how much does the state influence private companies, or how much does the party influence private companies? For some companies, you know, the answer could be very little. And for others, state influence or party influence could be quite significant. You really have to look at the sector that we're talking about.
So, Don, if some sectors interest the party a lot, so they do want control, presumably some of that is secretive, but some of it you can see. Are there, you know, these party committees that private companies have to have, or the government taking a stake in a private company? What are the kind of telltale signs that you've seen that tell you about party control on the rise?
So you can actually see some of this influence in places where China's corporate sector and foreign investors come together. One place to look would be the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. So a couple of years ago, investors realized that Chinese companies were adding party committees into their articles of association. So this essentially gives party committees some level of influence in how these companies operate, although it wasn't clear, and it's still not really very clear how they operate. So that's a very clear paper trail for seeing party influence pop up all of a sudden within Chinese companies.
Are there other methods besides the party committees?
Yes. So one thing that we've seen more recently is this concept called golden shares. So you can go back a decade and find rumors of state companies taking control of very small stakes in some of the biggest tech companies. This was rumored for a long time. But for the first time in 2021 or 22, we began seeing state investors taking very, very small stakes in the subsidiaries of some Chinese tech groups. These are often referred to as golden shares. And they're called golden shares because they're incredibly valuable. And yet the investor pays very little for them. And the investor also gets amazing terms for these types of deals. Often they're able to appoint a board member to the company that they're investing in. So this is kind of unheard of for an investor to come in, take a 1% share in a company for a very small amount of money and be able to appoint a board member in that company.
That's really interesting because, of course, TikTok, which is owned by ByteDance, argues that the ways that the Chinese state influences private companies is not applying to them.
So if you looked at the ownership structures of ByteDance and TikTok, you wouldn't be able to find a connection between those two companies. So on paper, the statement that this type of golden share arrangement in ByteDance has no impact on TikTok, that's true.
But of course, many members of Congress, they think they've found a smoking gun, which is the publicly available national intelligence law that China published in 2017 that says that every citizen organization has to help China's spy agencies collect data if they want. And we've heard this come up again and again.
Yeah, remember last year in March, the TikTok CEO, he appeared before the House Energy Committee and he was questioned by Representative Dan Crenshaw about that 2017 law and whether it meant that TikTok would have to hand over any data or secrets that the Chinese government demanded.
So Mr. Chu, if the CCP tells ByteDance to turn over all data that TikTok has collected inside the U.S., even within Project Texas, do they have to do so according to the Chinese law?
Congressman, first, I'm Singaporean.
That's fine, yeah. But there are employees of yours and ByteDance is in China.
We understand this concern. In my opening statement, we said we hear these concerns. We didn't try to avoid them or, you know, trivialize them. We built something where we take that data and put it out of reach. This is what we did. We put it out of reach.
Out of reach, but they own you.
No, we put it out of reach by storing them.
ByteDance owns TikTok. If ByteDance is told, and the CCP owns ByteDance because the CCP owns everybody in China.
Yeah, that's another depressing exchange from Congress, where essentially there is no denial from a Chinese company's representative that can satisfy that particular member of Congress, because his view is that, well, of course you'd say that because the Chinese Communist Party controls everything in China and can make you deny things in front of me. And so you see, it's an entirely kind of hollow debate that we're now locked into. But Don, there is a really serious policy question embedded in the middle of that fairly dispiriting exchange, right? That ByteDance says, we fixed this because we built this complicated thing. It has this name, Project Texas, which is basically a fancy way of saying we put all the data in places that Chinese government can't touch. In your world of business and finance, do people actually really believe these assurances that at the end of the day, a Chinese company can say no to the Chinese authorities?
Increasingly, I think people believe that it's very, very difficult to say no to the Communist Party, especially if you have a large business within China, as ByteDance does. One example that I would raise is another global Chinese company called Shein.
Oh, the fast fashion, yeah.
Exactly. Shein is based in Singapore. Most of its assets are overseas. It only manufactures clothing in China. And yet at the same time, for Shein to go public on a foreign stock exchange, it still needs Chinese regulatory approval. If a company has assets in China, it's very plausible that the government or the party could apply pressure to make that company respond to its commands.
And the Chinese government, when it has leverage, we have examples, right, that it does play rough. And in fact, the ByteDance founder and former CEO Zhang Yiming find that out to his cost. Isn't that right?
I think that companies like TikTok are really in a kind of impossible situation, because it's almost like no matter what they do to try to prove to the American politicians that they put the data out of reach, they're going to say no to the Communist Party. It's getting harder and harder to believe. And in this particular case with ByteDance, it doesn't help that back in 2018, ByteDance, because they have a whole bunch of different kinds of social media apps, they had one app that was criticized in state media for bad influence. And then when they didn't respond sufficiently to that criticism, it actually got shut down. And then ByteDance's founder and former CEO, Zhang Yiming, made this public apology.
And what's that really tell you is that you can be a billionaire in China, you can have a global business, but the party is capable of making you grovel at home in a way that makes all of your operations overseas seem tainted. And you can see the trap that Chinese private businesses are in now, that if the accusation is fundamentally everything that comes out of your mouth could be a lie because the party can make you lie to me, what are you supposed to say at that point? There's no point even saying another word, because that's the kind of framing of this. And I do think that the party bears some of the blame.
Yeah, and it's not just that the American politicians won't trust these Chinese tech companies. Actually, the Chinese government itself doesn't have much trust in them. And you can see that in the way that it's exerting control, to the extent that it's even demanding to look more into the social media companies' algorithms. Don, I know you've been looking at that, right?
Yes, I think you're right. China's internet regulators have been some of the most proactive in terms of regulating algorithms and AI over the past couple of years. So in 2022, the Cyberspace Administration launched an algorithm registration system. So this is for any algorithm that makes a recommendation to users on their phones or on their computers. And essentially what this system does is it helps the regulator understand how algorithms are being trained, the data that algorithms are based on, and it gives regulators a view into the black box of algorithms to help them better understand how they work. Now, you might ask, is that difficult to accomplish? Can the government actually do this? And I think most people looking at this right now would say, yes, it's an incredibly difficult feat to accomplish. Often the people that create the algorithms don't know exactly how they work, but it says something that the government is actually trying to do this. No other government on the planet has any kind of official system for doing this kind of work.
And you could imagine an American politician being sort of sympathetic in the abstract, the idea that we'd all like to know what's in the black box that is choosing the videos that are shown to people's kids. But I guess if the only government that has found a backdoor into that black box is the Chinese government, that does not reassure members of the US Congress.
I think it's safe to say that the US and China have many of the same concerns. But when you hear about finding a backdoor into an algorithm, and it is the Chinese government that's doing it, it does sound quite alarming.
Yeah, and Don, I guess my question is, when you're saying the Chinese government is the only one that's trying to actually get inside the black box, is it just that they want to understand how the algorithm works, or do they want to actually tweak it to their own preferences so that they can use Chinese social media to shape their citizens' views?
We can't see everything that goes into this registration system, but we do have some information on it. And some of the best researchers who are looking at this right now think that the Chinese government may want to be able to tweak algorithms. So basically, if they understand how an algorithm works and the data that it's based on, they might want to go in and say, hey, you need to include more data in your data set, or you need to include this kind of data or that kind of data in your data set. And yeah, I mean, it's quite powerful if it's possible to do, but the jury is still out on that.
And if the listeners are thinking, hang on, this is all sounding very, very technical, what is the link with a debate about whether we should ban or sell TikTok? Here's the link, which is that if your concern is you don't know what is in the algorithm and your only solution is to force TikTok to be sold, we know that the Chinese government says it will not allow TikTok to be sold. And there's a kind of benign explanation for that refusal, but there's a sinister one. So the benign one is, this is a very valuable piece of technology, a piece of intellectual property, and China doesn't want it to be taken away from a successful Chinese company. It's just defending its own successful companies. But of course, the sinister explanation, if that's where you want to think, is, well, maybe this entire machine, this algorithm, has been weaponized by the Chinese Communist Party's propaganda machine or its spy agencies, and that's why they don't want to sell it, because it's their powerful tool and they don't want it falling into enemy hands.
Yeah, clearly this is something that's on people's minds. And of course, you know, people have speculated on this. I don't know the answer to the question, but I doubt we will ever find out, because I don't think that a sale would be allowed.
And actually, China's Ministry of Commerce has openly stated last year, they said, because this would be technology export, they would not allow TikTok to be sold. So this is the spokeswoman saying, if this news is true, then China will firmly oppose it. Selling TikTok would involve export of technology, and it would require government approval in accordance with Chinese regulations. And China would make a decision based on relevant laws. But essentially, it's likely that they would say no.
With all the evidence that the U.S. government has laid out against TikTok, I think the fact that the Chinese government has come out and said they won't allow the sale of the company is some of the strongest to show the link between ByteDance and the overseas TikTok unit. ByteDance and TikTok, they reiterate that they are separate companies. And yet the Chinese government says that, you know, it won't allow the sale of what TikTok claims is not a Chinese company.
It reminds me so much of when Huawei was trying to build 5G telecoms networks around Europe, and they were saying, we're a private company, we just happen to be Chinese, why are you treating us like anything other than a bigger multinational? And then the Chinese embassy in that country was going to those governments and saying, if you don't allow Huawei to build your 5G network, then your entire relationship with China will be put in jeopardy. And it's like, hang on, I thought you said they weren't an arm of the Chinese state. Why is the ambassador in my office screaming at me? And so they were kind of really stuck by the level of support they were getting from their own state, right?
The Chinese government is essentially making a claim that the TikTok algorithm falls somehow within Chinese law. And you have, you know, the TikTok CEO making a completely different case, which is that TikTok is not a Chinese company and, you know, has no connection with China.
I see. There's a contradiction there, because they're like, this is our Chinese algorithm.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, with friends like that, who needs enemies? Don't. If this sale is blocked and Congress sort of holds firm and this bill passes and it gets banned in America, just as a technical question, you know, help us understand, how would it work for it to be banned in America but maybe not in Europe?
Yeah, well, I guess they could take a page from the Chinese regulatory playbook. You know, one thing they could do is they can tell app stores like the Android App Store and the Apple App Store not to distribute the TikTok app anymore. I think web hosting can also be targeted as well by the government, and they can stop TikTok from being hosted online. It's not going to stop people from using TikTok. Just like banning Twitter or YouTube or Facebook in China has not stopped Chinese people, at least in big cities, from using those apps. At the end of the day, we might find that TikTok users in the US look a lot like Twitter users or Facebook users in China, they may use VPNs, virtual private networks, to get out of America and go pick up Canadian TikTok or German TikTok.
And then to make subversive comments criticizing the American government from outside.
I suppose if they're really desperate to get on TikTok, it's perfectly imaginable.
Don, it's been fantastic hearing your explanation about all these ways that the Chinese Communist Party and the government can influence private business and how it's making life very, very hard for companies like ByteDance.
Thanks, Don. Hope we'll have you here again soon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
So, David, if we go back to the question we asked at the top, does Chinese ownership of TikTok really pose a threat to America? I think the tricky thing here is that there hasn't been any concrete proof of the Communist Party using TikTok in these nefarious ways that American politicians are worried about, whether it's taking people's data secretly or censorship or influence. But it's just the possibility of that happening is enough to justify this bill and this requirement that they need to cut ties. And I think, again, it comes back to just distrust of the Chinese government because of the things that it has been doing.
Yeah, Alice, I'm glad you mentioned trust because I think that is the core of it. And, you know, with Huawei, it's a really good example. Huawei was being accused of maybe they're going to use 5G networks to spy on the West. And they tried to turn that into a technical problem. Look, here's the box. Look in the box. There isn't a back door. You can't see anything nefarious. But it turned out that it wasn't a technical problem. It was a political problem. The problem wasn't, can we find a back door in a Huawei box? The problem was, do we trust a country like China to be the source of something as important and sensitive as a 5G network? And that's just really hard if you're a Chinese multinational, because I think we're moving into a world where people don't believe that a multinational can just happen to be Chinese in its headquarters, that somehow you are always unable to say no to the Chinese state.
In my view, it's incredibly unfair to those Chinese companies and hardworking Chinese entrepreneurs who maybe they do just want to make a good product and it's not their fault that they are Chinese citizens and that they came from China, but it's the world we're in. It's the direction that China is going. The Chinese government is not making it any easier for them either with its kind of overbearing insistence on control and access in the tech industry. And so I can understand the complaint that, you know, you're being targeted because you're Chinese. On the other hand, I also completely understand the security fears, especially when we now know that, you know, social media is no laughing matter. Social media has a huge impact on shaping people's world's views, on creating polarization in society. Even non-Chinese social media companies are causing big problems. And a lot of people have said, if America really wants to protect its citizens from having their data taken and having their views manipulated, then they need to pass more extensive regulation on social media companies across the board in a fairer way without singling out individual countries that they see as hostile.
Sure, Alice, you're absolutely right that these private tech companies, these private social media companies are frighteningly powerful. But I think we also know that ownership matters. And if you doubt that, look at what's happened to Twitter since Elon Musk bought it. It's changed in ways that clearly reflect his worldview and his ideological preferences. And so ownership isn't everything, but it does matter.
It's really unfortunate, I think, for these companies that just because they're Chinese, they're going to be treated as guilty, even though there's no proof of them having done anything wrong. And it's like just by association, because you're from China and you are under this system with this Chinese government and the Communist Party, you're seen as a threat. I mean, America has gone down that path before, and I think it's a really scary place to be in, and it can be really dangerous for a lot of Chinese individuals. At the same time, because we know the party and we know the Chinese government from all the years we spend reporting on it, I completely understand why things are playing out in this way. It seems like that's just the way it's going to be, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Thank you for listening to Drum Tower. And thanks especially to Pete and Nancy in California. They listened from their home near Monterey Bay, and they told us that after 30 years together, our show gives them something new to talk about and discuss. We love reading those emails, so please keep sending us more at drum@economist.com.
Our editor is Poppy Sebag Montefiore. Alize Jean-Baptiste and Jiehao Chen produced this episode. Sound design is by Tingli Lim. Drum Tower's music was composed by Jocelyn Tan. The executive producer is Hannah Marino.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.